When Jasmine Blooms, my latest novel, is out. Perfect for book clubs, When Jasmine Blooms is a contemporary take based on Abigail Alcott and Marmee of Little Women, a novel about Celine, a grieving life coach faced with an intervention who thinks what if and wakes up one morning in that reality. Grab it wherever books are sold or at tinyurl.com/When Jasmine Blooms. Welcome to the Stories to Love podcast, the podcast where I fangirl over creators and find out all about their inspiration in hopes to boost our own inspiration. I am your host, Tiff Marcello, an inspiration seeker and your resident fangirl. Hi everyone, this is Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast and this is episode 80. Here with me today is Heather Weber. USA Today best-selling author Heather Weber is the author of more than 30 novels. She loves to read, drink too much coffee and tea, birdwatch, crochet, and bake. She currently lives near Cincinnati, Ohio, and is hard at work on her next book. In this episode, we discussed her most recent release, At the Coffee Shop of Curiosities, and how her books are sparked by songs. We talked about character development, when one is in the feelings when writing, and the changes in her authorial voice over time. Finally, we talked about the pivots in her 20-plus years in her career and throughout the changes in the publishing landscape. I want to thank all of you who have subscribed to this podcast. If you haven't, I'd love it if you click to follow so you can get notifications on every new episode. And if you found this podcast helpful and fun, please leave a rating and review. It really does help to boost discoverability. You can even share this episode with a friend. For more information about me, Tiff, and submitting to this podcast, please head on to my website at tiffmarcello.com. And here we go to my in conversation with Heather Weber. Hi there, it's Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast, and here with me is Heather Weber. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited that you're here today. Heather sent over her book, or her agent did, At the Coffee Shop of Curiosities, which is coming out in August. And so by the time you all hear this, it's already out. But it was such a wonderful book to read. I believe I read it in the spring. So thank you so much for coming, because I wanted to talk about this book. So if you can tell us real quick what At the Coffee Shop of Curiosities is about.
So it is about two women who are kind of haunted by their pasts. They're for different reasons altogether. It's about grief and love and forgiveness. And they're kind of in, on the cover, you'll see that there's a beautiful monarch butterfly, which plays a big role in the book. And that kind of represents them in a way that they're both kind of stuck in their own little cocoons. When they both need to change, they need to transform. One really wants to, and one doesn't want to. So this is the story of their journeys to kind of learn how to fly on their own.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. I mean, and it's absolutely perfect. It's a great way to summarize this book because there's so many different elements to it. But at the heart of it, it is about two women who have to transform. Can you tell us where this book derived from? So what was like the inspiration? What was like the catalyst to write this book?
So I've been writing standalones now for, I think this is my fifth standalone. And they all kind of, many of them, I'm not all of them, many of them are kind of sparked by songs. Mm-hmm. Like Midnight at the Blackbird Cafe was sparked by the Beatles song Blackbird. South of the Buttonwood Tree was sparked by Jim Croce's I Got a Name. And this book came to me by the Beatles again. The Beatles resonate with me for some reason. My very first thought for this, there's two things that really drove this book. One of them was Eleanor Rigby. Mm-hmm. My first thought was Eleanor Rigby with a ghost. And I was like, okay, all right, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And then the second thing was I was online one day, I was on Facebook, and there was a Facebook friend who had a post that she was just absolutely like gobsmacked because she'd opened her other folder in Facebook and found a message from her mom. And her mom had been passed away for 6-8 months at that point. And so it was like this message had come from beyond to land in her inbox. You know, and in technical terms, maybe this person just hadn't opened their other box for a while.
Right.
But my mind is like, so what if we did get an email from kind of beyond? And so with those two things, I took it and they kind of went sideways on me.
Yeah.
So my Eleanor Rigby became a man with a cat who's kind of got secrets of his own and this hoarder kind of house, which isn't really hoarding. It's just a collection of whims, as he likes to call it. And the email or the Facebook post became a letter, a hand-delivered letter, well, mail-delivered.
Yeah.
That one of my main characters, Ava, receives a letter in the mail, and it has no postmark. It doesn't say who it's from, and it's a letter with a job offering in Driftwood, Alabama, for the caretaker of this old man and his she-devil cat. And she decides that, so she's just had a terrible loss in her life mm-hmm. that she feels some regret about. And she decides to take a leap of faith and throw caution to the wind and leave her cocoon and make this trip down there and apply for this job. That kind of kicks us all off on the story.
First of all, there's a lot of things that came to my mind. The first thing is that the Beatles. So mm-hmm. I love the Beatles too. And interestingly, my daughter who's taking summer school at her university, and it's the history of rock. And so now my daughter who's like 18 is loving the Beatles, which kind of,
oh really,
you know, that whole resurgence of mm-hmm. you know, finding out that you both love the same things is really cool. Secondly, I would have imagined that same thing too. First of all, that person that received that Facebook note, I mean, talk mm-hmm. about a gift, right?
Yes, right. Yeah.
But at the same time, you're definitely an author because you were working. Yes. The ideas. It's so cool how ideas come and they kind of meld together, mm-hmm. you know, these little different parts. So from thought to that proposal, because you have an agent, so you had to go through that. Mm-hmm. Was that a long time? Is that usually a long time for you?
So because I've been with Forge for a while now, this is my fifth book with Forge, just putting together the proposal to publication, I guess. I'm trying to think. So this would have been like a year from proposal to publication. But no, 2 years. I'm sorry, 2 years. Wait, how long?
It does take forever. It seems like it should be more together. 2 years than
two
1 year.
I think. Yes, two years. Yes, because I had turned in the middle of Hickory Lane, mm-hmm. wrote the proposals, got the contract, and then the book was due the next year.
Yeah.
And then it comes out the next year after that. So it's just publishing is not a quick industry.
No. You know, you can really tell like your ease in storytelling because for those folks, you just need to pick up this book because I can't tell you everything that's in this book. But even in the first chapter, there was an ease in coming into it. It's like Ava's voice was solid, like in that first page. And that really shows, you know, in looking back at your publication history, you know, your first book out in 2002, the ease in which you come into a book. And that's why I was wondering, like, did you already fairly know these people before you jumped in? So in developing Ava and Maggie, so you've got two women, two different mm-hmm. points of view. You've mm-hmm. got, both of them are dealing with their own loss, but they're both markedly different people. So Maggie is a little bit more like peppy and just out there, like in
she's
it to win
go-getter.
It,
yeah.
right? And then you've got Ava, who's a little bit more shy, but she's doing her own thing, right? She's taking a mm-hmm. risk and coming to Driftwood. So in developing those characters, was it easy to find who they are and where they, what their insides were like?
So the beginnings of books are always hard for me because I'm not a plotter at the beginning. I'm a plotter at the end of the book.
Oh, interesting.
So for the first 100 pages, I'm kind of just trying to figure out who the characters are, where they're going, where I'm getting to. I know where I want to go eventually to the end. I usually when I start a book, I know where I want to start it, and where I want to end it, yeah. and the big kind of turning point in the middle. But how I get from those points, from the beginning to the middle, from the middle to the end, is all kind of foggy for me at first. So the first 100 pages is by far the longest it takes for me to write a book. It usually takes a couple of months just for the first 100 pages. And I always say I can't write the end until, wait, I can't write the beginning until I write the end. Because there's always something that I will change by the time I get to the end of the book. I will change something in the beginning, no doubt, every time. And I've learned this, and it's interesting in coffee shop, because the beginning of coffee shop, I was so, I don't know, I was really in my feelings when I was writing this book. Okay. They're just deeply emotional characters. And even, I mean, on the surface, Maggie is very go-getter, go get it done. But deep down, she is hurting.
Yeah.
So it's like to kind of have that dichotomy of her personality that, yes, give me more things to do. Let me take it on. Let me do this. And then it all kind of crashing down is just a lot emotionally to take on as a writer.
Yeah.
And I rewrote that beginning probably five times. And it's interesting because when I turned in the first draft to my editor, it actually went to print. So it, at the back of, in the middle of Hickory Lane, mm-hmm. is the blurb for this book. And that went to print before the finalization of these edits.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you will see a different version of chapter 2 in the paperback of In the Middle of Hickory Lane than actually what was published. Because it's just, it wasn't quite right. And I needed it to be just a little bit more peppy because I was just like drowning in the feelings. Yeah. So you will see that as a reader. It's kind of an interesting glimpse into the process.
Yeah.
As if you're a writer, it's an interesting glimpse into what cannot be changed after things go to print. Because as much as I was like, can we please, can we please revise this before it goes? No, too late. So I'm like, oh no.
My God.
We just take that as a learning lesson and move on. But it is an interesting kind of glimpse into what happens behind the scenes between when you turn a book in and when it is published. The basic characters are there, but the scenes are kind of rearranged.
Yeah.
So
I love that you said that you were in your feelings, because I feel that, you know, it's every book is different. So my, you know, your state of mind changes, right? Or you're just in a different phase. So I've only been a writer, you know, I've only been published for 6 years, but so much has happened in the 6 years. And I have cataloged, like, okay, I am in a different mental state today for, you know, book 3 versus like book 11, right? Mm-hmm. And it's good and not great at times. So it's so interesting and cool that you acknowledge that you were in your feelings. So there was something to dig up on your side as well, or something to dig through in order to get the words out. So has this happened? You mentioned that, of course, Ava and Maggie, they are very emotional characters. Were you in that phase with your other books at all? Or did you feel like this was just special in that way?
I think that, you know, so the shift in my voice. So I wrote before, this is my 33rd book to come out to be published.
Congratulations.
Which is amazing. But most of those were mystery series, and most of those were humorous mysteries. And somewhere around the 2009-2010 era, my voice started to change. It started to change from the humorous, my writing voice started to change from more humorous to more emotional, which kind of led me to the path of where I am now writing these stories. And I don't know what exactly changed in me, or just maybe growth, just natural getting older and living life, and with age comes wisdom, that I wanted to develop more emotional characters, more emotional journeys than, you know, killing people off in every book, which, you know, had its benefits. Okay, I'm not going to lie, but it's just
the release. You know, like, so your mysteries before, they were cozies. Were they cozies?
Yes.
So interestingly, like as I'm reading, when I read your book first, I had not researched you yet. I know your name. I know who you are. So I was like, okay, let me read this. So exciting, right? Read your book. And then I realized that you wrote cozies, and I'm like, that's where the quirky side characters come from.
Yes.
I mean, I really made that connection, and I was like, oh, those side characters in Coffee Shop, like, really diffused so much of what I think is that emotional journey. I think it was a really great balance. So when you create side characters, Are they are you just kind of picking them out in the air? Do they just come to you? Or, and I guess my second question is, as you're planning this town, Driftwood, is it a completely made from scratch town, or was there a place in Alabama or in the South that you felt like kind of exuded that vibe?
So with the secondary, I love secondary characters. They are my favorite things to write in the whole world. Like, they are the, I don't know. I always say that if books were soup, then the secondary characters are the spices. They're just,
I
they
love
just,
it.
They just brighten everything up. I could write them all. They could write their own stories. Like, I could write, yeah. I could write a book for each of the secondary characters. And I was just saying to my daughter earlier today that this book in particular has maybe in all of my books, and this is a big statement, and I might change my mind at a later date, my favorite cast of secondary characters that I think I've ever written, because they're just wonderful people, and, you know, so different from each other, and kind of teach the lesson of embracing differences, and but also loving each other, like lifting each other, which is something I love about small towns. For the town itself, I visited the Gulf Coast of Alabama 2 years ago for the first time, and I'm like, I love it here. I love it here. I grew up in Massachusetts on the water. So the water to me is just like magic. But Massachusetts water and Gulf of Mexico water are very different. Yeah. They're just very different. Massachusetts water, very cold. Yeah. Very cold. I have a trauma from swimming lessons, having swimming lessons in the water in Massachusetts with the jellyfish and the barnacles. And but the Gulf of Mexico water, clear blue, a sugar sand. I mean, it's just so gorgeous. So if on a map, you're looking on a map, I dropped Driftwood, which is a fictional town, in the middle of Gulf Shores and Fort Morgan, if you know the map, you know exactly where I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I had to play with the topography a little bit to make my town work in that little space on the peninsula. But I just wanted a small southern town on the water.
Yeah. So I love it. You know, I love the water too. I'm not a big swimmer, you know, myself. I almost drowned as a kid. And ever since then, it was I just am not in it, right? It doesn't mean that I don't like being around water. And we actually took a vacation out to California, and all of our beach time has always been kind of like in the Outer Banks area. Mm-hmm. And so we took a trip to see my family, and it was, you know, the Pacific Ocean. And I love the Pacific Ocean. It's so interesting how each body of water gives its own different vibe. And I was like, how do we move here? And our children are all going to end up in the East Coast. So we're like, there's no way we're going to move to California. It's just one of these things where the water is healing. There is magic
There's something about it, yes.
Yeah. And in infusing magic, so this is your sixth standalone with magic?
My fifth one.
Okay.
My fifth one. Yeah, I had to think about that.
It is a great balance of infusing things that are magical in which that I could probably, if I were to really get in tune with myself, I could feel that magic too. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I love about contemporary magic, right? That whole idea of it really being there, but it's just us kind of tuning in as to whether or not we feel it. So, do you ever go overboard, like in your writing? Is it over magicked, and you're like, and your editor's like, pull it back?
So with the book I just finished, it comes out next summer. I caught myself having too much magic.
Yeah.
So it was like I have, of course, the two main characters, and I had an aunt, and they all had different kinds of magic, and then there was magical town, and then there was magic in the bakery, and I'm like, whoa, okay, no, we need to narrow this down. It just became like the magic was taking over, which I don't want in my books. It's not the point of the magic in my stories. The magic is just like kind of like what you said, kind of just enhances the story a little bit. It's the everyday kind of magic that maybe might possibly happen to you. Mm-hmm. Or if you pay close enough attention to it, kind of thing. So.
I love it. Now, you know, the title, At the Coffee Shop of Curiosities, can you explain to our listeners, you know, what do you mean by curiosities?
So in the book, there is, in the corner of the coffee shop, there is a curiosity corner, which Maggie fills up with treasures that she finds. And she finds them kind of anywhere, you know, on the walking the beach, in the trash, at flea markets, at yard sales. It's an object to her that just gives off a little vibration. And so she brings it back to the coffee shop and puts it in the coffee in the curiosity corner. Yeah. And she waits for a person to come through the door that has a similar vibration that she can feel. Yeah. And then she matches them. And the magic is that that object reminds that person of something in their past that they love. For the most part, there is one secondary character who gets matched with a teaspoon or a set of teaspoons and realizes that she wants to learn how to bake. So that kind of thing is just, it kind of triggers a kind of a hidden passion, or re-triggers it to come back out and to do something with it.
Yeah. I mean, I am not a trinket collector, but I definitely like think about those things. Like my mom will give me something and I will never, ever, ever get rid of it. And I could have, you know, gone through all of my things. We move around a lot because we're in the military, and I would have, you know, unloaded so many things throughout our career, right? But there are some things that just, you know, elicit that feeling. Mm-hmm. And I love that you kind of honed in on that things can mean something too. I don't know. I just thought that was really super neat. I'm going to go on to this quote that in the arc is on page 33. So it's going to be different for folks out there with the finished copies. And this is in Maggie's point of view. And she is describing the mermaids. So I will start now. Quote, "The relatively slow morning was the proverbial calm before the storm, since I knew the mermaids, members of Driftwood's beachcombing club, would be along soon enough. They arrived every morning around 9 after having walked the beach with their buckets and bins, searching for treasures like driftwood, shells, fossils, and sea beans. Mostly, though, the mermaids were on the hunt for sea glass, which was extremely rare on our beaches, but more likely to be discovered after a big storm." So I love that last line. Mostly, though, the mermaids were on the hunt for sea glass, which was extremely rare, because it reminds me, it was as if she was talking about the other character, Ava, our other protagonist, who kind of washed up on their shore after her own storm. And I thought about how people come together, or how people move through life, right? And kind of wash ashore into other people's lives.
Yes.
After like a huge upheaval.
I love that you put that together. I hadn't intended it that way, but maybe subconsciously I did.
Yes, absolutely. It's genius work.
I love that you put that together, because that's exactly true. Like Ava just kind of shows up in Driftwood and everyone kind of, you know, adopts her. Yeah. And she's just so afraid to kind of show her true self to these people, but she needs to kind of, you know, dust herself off and let herself sparkle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love that. You know, at 21 years, you have pivoted from what I saw on your backlist. You had romance, and then you had mysteries, and now you have these standalones. Mm-hmm. Now, in the flow of those 21 years of life, was it a natural movement to these different genres, or was it out of necessity? How did that work for you?
So I've had a very interesting career with lots of pivots, as they like to say, in the business world. So I first started writing, I was 25 years old, and I had no business writing. I didn't go to college for writing. I was a young mom of 3 kids, stay-at-home mom, and I woke up with a dream, a literal dream. And I told my husband, I said, you know, this dream would be such a good movie, because, you know, I can see everything happening. It would be so great. I said, no, it has to be a book. Yeah. It has to be a book, because, you know, the movie cuts out all the good parts and this has so many good parts.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and said, why don't you write it?
Yeah.
And we laugh now, like it's, you know, 30 something years later. We laugh now that what if he hadn't said that to me?
Yeah.
And what if I wasn't young enough and naive enough to believe I could do it?
Yeah.
Because half the battle is believing you can do it, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wrote that book. I wrote it, and it was actually, looking back now, it's actually my first magical realism book.
Oh, wow.
It was a story of two baseball players and an angel and
oh wow,
family saga. And I had everything and the kitchen sink in this book, but I still love it. And I sent it off to agents and editors, and I got rejection after rejection after rejection. I cried and I cried and I cried. So I gave myself 5 years because my daughter, my youngest, was 2 at that time. And I said, well, 5 years, she'll be full-time in school. And if I don't get published in 5 years, then I will just, you know, go back to school. I'll become a nurse. Mm-hmm. And I got my first contract 6 months before my 30th birthday. So the book didn't actually come out until after my five-year deadline, but I had the contract just before it. So it is the power of perseverance right there. And just keep believing, keep believing. So those first books were a romance trilogy, historical romance with elements of mystery. Mm-hmm. And as I was writing them, I realized that I loved the mystery aspect of it. So I kind of went into the mystery field. And I didn't realize I was writing cozy mysteries at the time. I was just writing humorous mysteries.
Yeah.
And so those next five books were humorous mysteries, and found out that they were published through Avon, HarperCollins. And they decided to close their cozy line. Mm-hmm. So me and a whole bunch of other authors kind of lost our job in one fell swoop. And so I was like, oh, okay, where do we go from here? Okay, what else can I write? What else do I want to write?
Yeah.
And I had this idea for a psychic in Boston, where kind of near my hometown where I grew up. And she solves, her family owns a matchmaking firm. And through the power of auras, they match people through that. So there's a little bit of magic there. And she lost that power when she was younger. But she has a different power that she can find people through the energies in their hands. She can find lost objects through the energy in people's hands. And so like when she shakes hands, that kinds of thing. And so she starts working for the state police and help solving cold cases.
Yeah.
And this is my Lucy Valentine series, a very, very popular series, still one of my most popular series. And she eventually uses her talents in the family business by finding lost loves.
Yeah.
So I found out not too long after the third book came out that they weren't going to renew that series. And so I'm like, okay, back to square one. Where do we go from here? By then, I found out I really loved magic.
Yeah.
I really love magic and stories, whether it's psychic, whether it's auras, that kind of thing. And so I switched to writing as Heather Blake, as a pen name, a series of lovable witches set in Massachusetts and Salem. They live in the Enchanted Village. There's familiars. And that series is 9 books. Mm-hmm. And it is really where I started to change as a writer from those humorous mysteries, which they are still humorous books. But I really got into the character and the character development and their emotional journeys. And so while I was writing those, I also wrote another witch series set in Alabama called the Magic Potion series, mm-hmm. which I also love. Those are a little more humorous than the Enchanted Village mysteries. But Berkeley NAL decided to close their cozy line. So with a one clean sweep, me and a whole bunch of other authors lost our jobs. So I kind of had a decision to make. So at that time that they closed their cozy line, their paperback cozy line, they kept their hardcovers, I was on book 7 of what I thought at that point was going to be a 10-book series. Mm. Like I had always envisioned it to be 10 books. I had the story arc for 10 books. And I had a decision to make whether to try to move that series somewhere else or try something new. And I decided that I would do both, basically. Mm-hmm. I wanted to finish the series, so I did take it to another publisher to finish that series out because I knew if I tried to do it on my own, it would not get done. It just would not get done. I needed the deadlines. And at the same time, I decided I had been thinking about Blackbird since 2013. I think mm-hmm. that's when the first kernel of Blackbird, mm-hmm. Midnight at the Blackbird Cafe, first entered my head, was like, yes. And I had talked to my agent about it. I talked to my editor about it. And it was just finding the time to write it because I was writing 2 to 3 books a year at that point of mysteries. And so really the closing of the cozy line was like a silver lining for me
wow.
because it gave me the chance to kind of decide whether I wanted to keep writing cozies or take a bigger leap into this new world. And so I took the leap, you know, that saying, a leap and the net will appear. Yeah. My net appeared, thankfully. So, and I am so happy in this genre. I love writing women's fiction. I love writing magical realism. I love writing heartwarming, uplifting stories that kind of just, by the time you finish them, just feel like a hug. Yeah. So, yeah.
It definitely does. I mean, you have really weathered, right? For folks out there that don't realize it, like, publishers have imprints that close, or smaller pubs close, right? Yeah. And more imprints sometimes pop up, or more opportunities can just, like, kind of turn its head. But what has, like, remained consistent in terms of how you approached the changes that occur? Because also throughout all this time, if folks don't know either, you know, like, the rise and fall of vampires, you know, the rise and fall of dystopian. Yeah. I mean, there's so many trends that come and go. Like, what is a good thing to, I guess, impart for somebody that, you know, is looking at, you know, publishing landscape and going, oh my gosh, there are more changes now, right? There are changes happening today. Like, it's rom-coms are hot, hot, hot. And then vampires, I think, is starting to peek their heads again.
Right?
Witches are back. Right. So, like, what would you say to, you know, obviously to someone like me who's only like 6 years in the business?
That's still amazing in this business, 6 years. I would say, and this is advice I give to everybody, that, and it's advice for me first and foremost, I write the books I want to read. And so I feel like if you just write books that you want to read, that you want to write, they will eventually find a home. Because I feel like if you try to write for a trend, if you're me and you're suddenly going, well, you know, vampires are hot, maybe I'll try to write a vampire, it's not going to read as true. And readers will pick up on that real fast. There's nobody who can see through that faster than a bookworm. Sure. So now, that's not to say don't write vampires. If you have a legitimate interest in writing vampires in that kind of genre, go for it. Like, this is your chance. Jump in while it's hot. But if you're just trying to write towards a trend, it's not going to go well. It's just not going to go well for the most part.
Yeah. I love that. Love that advice. Yeah. So what is on the docket now? So you just said that you finished your 2024 book. Is it already to your editor, or you just finished up the drafting?
Wow. I just sent it in. I sent it in early July. And so I haven't gotten my revision letter yet or anything. I'm in that happy place.
Yeah, that is a beautiful spot.
That place between turning it in and getting the revisions, which is usually a month, 2 months, something like that. And it's just like you're kind of in that, you know, that honeymoon phase. Yeah. Like, okay.
That's so funny because it's absolutely true. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yes.
And now, have you read anything great lately that you want to give a shout out to?
I read all the time. So I just finished Christy Woodson Harvey's The Summer of Songbirds.
Oh my gosh, that is on my list. I'm so excited to read that book.
It's really great female characters. She always does she paints such a picture of the South, and I love it. So this is a book I'm having trouble getting through, which is no fault of the book. It's just a deeply emotional book on just very many levels. It's nonfiction.
Okay.
It's called The In-Between, and it's from a hospice nurse. And her name is Hadley Vahlos. I think I'm saying that right. Vahlos. And she's telling the stories of her, I guess, clients or her patients who are in the last days of their life, and their, you know, what their stories are.
Oh,
and it's
goodness.
Just like, it is fabulous.
Yeah.
It is absolutely amazing. But I can only read two or three chapters at a time because it's like, emotional. I'm like tears coming down my face. I'm
Is there a book coming from this? This is my question.
Well, the reason I picked it up is because one of my next proposals is about a bookshop called the In-Between Bookshop.
Oh,
and so it's kind of, I was like, oh, she's talking about the In-Between. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, I picked it up. I'm like, where can I go with this? Can I kind of be inspired by it? And I think I can. I think I found some things that can kind of help my story along. So, is the great thing about reading is that, you know, you kind of find the things that inspire you and you run with them.
Yeah. And what I like about like this magic is that you can explore a lot of really emotional things.
Yeah.
Right. And it feels accessible because, you know, the element of magic kind of makes it a safer place to kind of delve into mm-hmm. some really deep issues that for some yeah. folks might really jar some emotions. Right. So to be able to kind of like take that part of, as a reader going, okay, let's go ahead and feel these things a little bit. It really does help process. Mm-hmm. I totally believe in books helping process emotions. Me yes. as an author writing books, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then as a reader reading books.
Yes. Oh my. Yes. I love the books too that you read and you forget you're an author.
Yeah.
Because they're very kind of few and far between where you're not like examining sentence structure and, oh, yeah. how did she do that? Oh, I didn't see that
yeah.
red herring or yeah. like, I love the books where you kind of just get caught up in the story. Like yeah. those are the truly special, special books to me.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. Oh my goodness. So my final question, and I ask this of all of my guests, is what makes you go? 21 years in the business, 33 books, through the ups and downs of life, changing and pivoting. What yeah. do you find yourself leaning toward doing or practicing in order to kind of stay in the game and to stay creative?
So I think for me, it really comes down, there's maybe two things. One thing is, first and foremost, the readers. So I remember when I was writing my Nina Quinn mysteries, which were early 2004, 2005, 2006, funny mysteries. She's a landscape designer with ex-cons who work as employees. So, of course, you've got your crazy kind of characters and secondary characters. And I received a letter from a woman who was just having a rough time in her life. She, you know, she was ill, and she said she just needed an escape. And she said she found it in my book. She said it made her laugh and it made her forget her problems. And like that to me is just like fills me right up, but like fills my heart to the tippy top. And that kind of drives me. Like I want to write books mm-hmm. that people finish them and are like, I'm glad I spent the time reading that book. I'm glad that I was able to escape for however long it took me to read this book. I've grown as a writer and writing these more emotional books that really my standalones are at their heart about grief, dealing with grief, dealing with loss, and to make those heartwarming and uplifting. And so people feel like, you know, they're dark subjects kind of wrapped in a hug that just kind of makes me feel good. And, you know, that's kind of hand in hand with the second thing is like, I really want to put out into the world things that are uplifting. Like that's a goal for me. Like I want you to be able to pick up this book. I want teenagers to read it. I want adults to read it and just feel like it's a good thing. Like it's an escape from a world that can be very hard and harsh.
Yeah. Oh, that's a perfect way to end this podcast. This is so fantastic. Thank you, Heather, for
coming so much for
and hanging out with me.
I could talk writing all day long.
I know. I know it. Me too. Oh my gosh. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here at the Stories to Love podcast. And thank you, Heather, once more. And we'll see you again. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me, Tiff Marcello, at the Stories to Love podcast. You can follow me through my newsletter at tiffmarcello.com. An Instagram and Facebook page under Tiff Marcello and the Stories to Love podcast. You can support this podcast by leaving a rating, spreading the word, and picking up one of my books for you and a friend on my website at tiffmarcello.com. I'll see you again.